Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us. Fortunately, Secretary Kaufman is unable to join us tonight, so I'm Christy Everett. I'm the Director of Energy and Finance, and I'd like to welcome each one of you for coming today, and also those of you who are on the web listening to our live audio broadcast. If you are listening remotely, I do want to point out now that we'll be going through a PowerPoint presentation. And if you'd like to go to our website, you can go pause this recording and go to that website and open the PowerPoint. Just go to the Secretary of State site, navigate to the campaign finance page, look under the link that says Other Important Information, and select the link that says Colorado Campaign Finance Filing System. The primary purpose of our meeting today is to receive comments, inputs, and ideas from administrators at the current campaign finance system to identify and make recommendations on what functionality should be added, what's not there that should be. But certainly we also encourage and welcome general public comment as well. It doesn't have to be specific to administrators. We don't see very many of our county brethren here. We do have some staff in the Secretary of State's office, but feel free to speak in. Speaking of faces, I should do some introductions. We have Colin Campbell. This is our Campaign Finance System Improvement Task Force. We have Colin Campbell. He's representing Echelon Data. Trevor Chinman's our Chief Information Officer for the Secretary of State. I never can get your title right. We have Cindy Razor from Jefferson County Clerk's Office. And I'm sorry, I don't have your name. Rory.
Schmalzried.
Thank you, Rory, from ABC. So that's our panel here tonight. And we also have a few staff in the back, Jonathan T., Stephanie Sikalski, and Rich Coolidge from our, for all of our faces. With that, if there aren't any initial questions, I'm going to start going through the PowerPoint presentation. I will apologize up front that some of this information is duplicative of that we did at the last campaign finance meeting. But as we have a slightly different audience, we thought most of this bore repeating. So first, let's briefly talk about the laws that govern campaign finance. You will notice throughout these PowerPoints that we refer to CPF. That stands for campaign finance, so just so you know. The main law that governs these provisions is the Colorado Constitution, specifically Article 28, known as the Campaign and Political Finance Act, sometimes known as Amendment 27, was passed in 2002. Underneath that are the Colorado Revised Statutes that further outline and define and set forth requirements. Those specific provisions are found in Title 1, Article 45. And then beneath the Colorado Revised Statutes, the Secretary of State also promulgates rules when things aren't perfectly clear with the Constitution or with statutes. So there are many different places we have to look when we look at the requirements and procedures of disclosure. Let's review the practices followed by the Secretary of State's office. And again, we're looking at the administrative side for this meeting, so some of you that are used to seeing the entry side will get a little behind-the-scenes look. For electronic filers, so if you're a state committee and you file electronically, when you file your report, that data is instantly available to the public and onto the system. That's pretty critical. The alternative is manual filers. And by manual, we mean supplying your disclosure information on paper, in a paper format, either by faxing it in or bringing it to the counter or mailing it in. When that happens, SOS staff takes that report that you've sent to us, it's scanned, and its image is uploaded to the website. That generally occurs within 24 to 48 hours where the image is available. But then data entry is required. So we have several staff members whose primary job it is to take those reports and basically transcribe the information from the paper report and enter it into the online filing system. That way it's searchable and available on the web. A little bit about enforcement. After the filing date is passed, Secretary of State's office runs a function in our current system to identify those individuals and committees and candidates who were scheduled to file a report but who did not do so. And we're going to refer to those kind of as delinquent filers for the purposes of this meeting and discussion. Once we identify delinquent filers, we email and regular mail letters to the agents of all those committees. We do our best to get that done within 5 days, hopefully sooner, but it does take a bit of time for these processes to happen, given that we have, you know, 7 major committees. Once a report is filed, after that notice of delinquency goes out, then the committee will receive that and hopefully file their report right away. Then staff sends an invoice for the fine assessed, and that penalty for delinquent filing is $50 per day. So it's a pretty substantial fine. And then we do generate, of course, the invoice and send a letter so that the committee can get a copy of that imposed fine. Our staff does review reports to make sure that they are compliant with the laws. We look at things like occupation and employer. Are they included for contributions that are $100 or over? It's a statutory requirement, so we're going to review. Right now, this is a manual process outside of the system. We make sure that there aren't any contribution limits that were exceeded. We make sure the beginning balance and ending balance reported and calculated are accurate and correct. And we look at things like dates and signatures and addresses to make sure that everything that is required under law is provided in those reports. If something does appear to be delinquent or deficient, or excuse me, not delinquent, but if it does appear to be deficient or missing, this is a sample of what our letter looks like. We refer to it as our audit letter. This, again, is a complete separate process that is not handled within the system. So it gets a little cumbersome for our staff when you can't work within one system. Now you have to go to an Excel spreadsheet and merge a letter and select the reasons that there was a deficiency. And this is something we would like to improve upon as we move through this process. Now we'll briefly talk about the county reporting side of things. We do have 64 counties in Colorado, and each one of them is the appropriate filing officer for your county committees, candidates for commissioner, clerk and recorder, treasurer, all of those things. So they go through the same process we do here at the state, with a few exceptions and differences. County committees This is important. At the state level for a state filer, the Secretary of State has adopted a rule mandating electronic filing effective October 1st of this year. That does not apply to county, but for state level filers, we will be moving away from that paper process with a few exceptions, if you have a hardship exemption or something like that. But the vast majority of our reports will be filed electronically. The county right now, they will accept both electronic filing using the Secretary of State's website, or paper reports can be filed with the county clerk. And as far as I'm aware, that process will continue for the electronic filing mandate, at least at this point, does not affect county filers. I briefly alluded to this earlier, but at the county level, these are all the people that are going to be filing. All your different candidates, special districts, school districts, in addition to those ones were more often seen on the ballot, such as, you know, commissioners, treasurer, assessor, coroner, things like that. Political committees that operate within a county, issue committees that operate wholly within a county, same thing for small donor, county political parties, and possibly now 527 political organizations. We're unsure of the impact 527s will have at the county level because this was a brand new law that came in, so we just don't know. This is statistical information on the amount or the number of candidates and committees that are registered in the database at this point. You can see that for the county level, you can see that the active candidate committees is a fairly low number right now. It's only 165. And that is probably because it's not a real exciting time for the county offices in the election cycle at this point. Most people were just elected last year, and so they've terminated their committees. A few have chosen to remain open. But it's early in the process, in most instances, to be declaring for the upcoming election cycle. So I think that this number really is not a true reflection of the amount of candidates county committees that are out there, given the time of election cycle that we are in. The numbers in 04 and 06 are going to be also reflected a little lower than what is accurate. That's because prior to January of 2006, counties were not required to enter their campaign finance disclosure information into the statewide database. So if you needed that information, you went directly to the county to get it. That's why in 2004, you can see we only had 14 and 4 candidate committees. That doesn't mean that there were only that many committees. It means that counties were not required to use the system, and so it just reflects a really low number. Reporting timeframes, very briefly, and this slide is up here to show you how often counties have to go through the process of looking at delinquencies and ensuring compliance and so forth. For your standard election at the county, conducted by the county, it's going to be 21 days before the election, the Friday before, and 30 days after. And then an annual report is due for any committees to stay open. Special district committees are very similar. It's, again, the 21 days before, Friday before, and 30 days after, but the annual report can vary and it's not always in October and November, given that special districts sometimes have elections in May, November, various times throughout the year. Contributions. So this is the information that a county is going to have to take off of a paper report and put into the system, or that a filer will do directly. Contributions under $20 can be lumped together in one sum and reported as non-itemized. Once that $20 threshold is met, for each contributor, the name and address has to be added, as well as the specific amount and the date the contribution received. Once you get to the $100 limit, in addition to those things in the second bullet, you will also need to supply occupation and employer. And it's important to know that all of these things have to be tracked and searchable within the system. Pointing them out. This is what our current contribution looks like. You can see it's kind of busy. And some fields are joined together, like name, for example, instead of the last name field and the first name field. Those are things that we'll be looking at as we move through this process to see if we can enhance or change. In addition to contribution, loans are reported. If a committee has a loan, you have to get the source, meaning the bank, an address of that source, what the original amount is, the amount remaining at the time, the interest rate, and the date of the current and the last payment. So all those things are captured in the system as well. This is what the loan screen looks like. Expenditures are very similar to contributions in that under $20 can be lumped into one sum for that reporting period, but once you get to the $20 threshold, you have to itemize each one. Date, the amount, name and address. Again, all of this is entered into the system and is searchable. And this is our expenditure screen. Looks a lot like the other screens. We're hoping you guys will have some ideas on that, how to help us improve this. Under the current reporting system, there are a few challenges that specifically the counties face. Reports can be received manually in paper form, as we spoke of earlier. Unfortunately, there's currently no scanning requirement or really mechanism or ability for the counties to scan those reports, Secretary of State then to post an image at the county level. So although you can see scanned reports at the statewide level, you can't see them at the county level. If a paper report is filed, again, it has to be manually on the state website. County committees do have the option of using an Excel or a tab delimited bulk filing method, but it's not only is it not widely used at the county level, I'm not aware of any county candidates that actually use these features. And what that means is it creates a lot of data entry work for the counties to do. Look at today is how can we make that process as efficient and effective as possible. We talked about sending a delinquency notice out. If a delinquent person is identified, it's sent via regular mail and email. There is the ability under the current system for state filers to search that information. So the public could look under a particular committee and find out if any delinquencies had been sent. And then again, we send an invoice via certified mail and email, and that's also searchable for state-level filers. Unfortunately, it's not real easy to find that information. And again, we want to right now, if you need to find out the committees, go into our elections image search screen, go down to this long drop box of various types of documents that are searchable, enter the committee's name, and then we'll get returns and access to those images. And at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Rich, who is going to give you a walkthrough of some of the things we have seen in other states.
Thank you, Christy. Rich Coolidge, Secretary of State's office. We have a next couple of slides are going to be different states and how they operate and do their delinquency reports and some other things that kind of fit in with this discussion. The first one here is Hawaii, of all places. The first part of that outlines the fines and some of the numbers of delinquent reports, administrative fines, and that sort of thing in the top part. The second part goes in and lists the amount of the fines. On the left side there, on the first part, it's parent engineers. They owe about $228,000, which could be a big part of Secretary of State budget in Hawaii. And in case you're wondering, they were listing fake names and exceeding contribution limits for that one, so that's a doozy. And on the left side, you'll see the CA number. You'll click on that, and you'll see a copy of the letter and the complaint that's listed on there, and kind of outlines why they were fined the way they were. This is Georgia's State Ethics Commission. Again, this one is the late filing folks. If you look down under, on this one we just went through, and you can do a search for a name. I just put in Smith. These are all the delinquent filers with the name of Smith. Third one down is a Mr. Andrew Smith. He failed to file his election year report for commissioner in Liberty County. Apparently he still owes $75, and the due date was September 2003. So that helps outline that. It also outlines basically what the filing office is, the report type that he missed or she missed, and the office that they were running for. Again, this is Georgia's State Ethics Commission. On the left side, you'll see the menu there, and it's opinions and orders. The orders section, basically a list of cases against committees and their proposed punishments. On the opinion side is basically areas where the Ethics Commission has had to weigh in on policy issues. Kind of a neat idea. If you look at the second one down, it deals with campaign funds. Somebody submitted a question wanting to use campaign funds for a retirement party for a judge of some sort, Superior Court judge, which is elected apparently in Georgia. The advisory opinion said you'll click on that link on the side, basically said that they should not use campaign funds for a retirement party. But this is kind of a neat idea to float these kinds of issues and get an idea on where the commission's going to land before you're punished for it. Next one is Michigan. This is basically a listing of all the committees that have missed two filing reports and are now on their way to the Attorney General's office. Here's a copy of one of the memos that the Department of State will send over to the Attorney General. This one lists 47 committees that have failed to file two or more campaign statements. As you scroll down on this letter, it lists the committee name, the treasurer's name, address, and phone number, and the report they're missing, and so on and so forth. So I guess if you wanted to call some of these folks and remind them yourselves, you could do that. This is also Michigan. This is how you can do a search for late contributions. Again, on this one, you'll see on the left side there, you can search by committee type. And underneath that, you can do a more targeted search for a specific candidate name and whatever kind of report you're looking at. This one, we just did a basic search for county political party and as an active committee. First one there is Oakland County Democratic Party. Had a late contribution report. That'll take you to this screen here. It outlines kind of the committee contact information up top, and then on the bottom, it's all their scanned reports that are listed in there. Everything from a copy of their check that they wrote paying the fine to the letter that they submitted. Similar to our system, but this puts it all in kind of one list. This is Virginia's campaign finance homepage. Virginia is unique. It prides itself on full disclosure, no campaign finance limits. So we want to. We'll see this one again on the next committee as well. But you'll notice there, second one from the bottom on the left is a list of violators to the act. So they're going to do that. Unfortunately, that page is under construction, so we couldn't include it. But just wanted you to see Virginia as we move along here. This is Texas Ethics Commission. Again, on the bottom, you can see the delinquent filers list. This is a specific list of the delinquent filers for candidates and office holders. Unfortunately, for this one, you don't get to see if they've paid the fine yet, if litigating the fine, which report they missed. So this just gives you kind of a general idea on its fine amounts more than anything. Iowa. Iowa's got a big page here. This one is essentially all the infractions and violations that they've had. On the left side, you'll see actions there. And as you click on those links underneath, if you go to, let's say, the waiver request actions, it'll bring up another list. Well, you go to the year first, 2007, let's say. You'll look at, they'll give you two options of an Excel spreadsheet or a PDF that lists all the committees that have requested a waiver, the reason for requesting a waiver, and the ethics board's final decision on waive it or not. There's also an option for rescissions and reductions in fines. Sanctions, same kind of idea. You click on one of the links underneath there, and you can track down who was sanctioned for whatever issue they had. And they'll give you a copy of the letter they submitted to that committee or that candidate. Hearings, same kind of idea. If you look at the bottom there, it'll say, click here to view how to file a complaint. This is what pops up. It's basically a PowerPoint presentation. You scroll through the slides to figure out how, basically the process for filing a complaint, what you can expect as you go through that complaint process. This is a copy of the form that someone would submit for a complaint. Basic information, it has what the committee is, the committee's name you're going after, why you're going after them, your name. And then this, there's a big piece in the middle there that basically you can write a paragraph or a novel saying why you are signing this complaint, and we left copies for the committee as well in your packets there. The last page here basically says under perjury of law, I say that this is all true to the best of my knowledge, and sign it. Then I'll turn it back over to Steve.
Close to the end here. So at this point, the last few slides, we wanted to go through some things the Secretary of State's office has initially identified as problem areas or challenge areas, if you will, the things that we would definitely like to see included into the new system. So this is meant to spark discussion, hopefully from you, to let us know what you would like to see, particularly from the county that is here today. Please let us know. We're thinking about automatic review of violations. So if a report is submitted electronically, could and ought the system review that report to see if there are any glaring deficiencies? Over $100 in occupation and employer is not there. We feel that this might help not only the filer by identifying things that were deficient and inaccurate, but could there be functions built in so that the filing officer, be it the county or the state, would receive some sort of automatic notification that, hey, this report was filed and it looks like on these entries something was clearly in violation of law. And surprisingly, we don't have that right now. We would also like to see a request for waiver. The system at this point doesn't have that functionality built in, so it's a manual process. That's what we're here to talk to tonight. Also waivers. Does it make sense for a filer who has a username and password to request a waiver online? Say, oops, I filed this report delinquently. Please accept this as my request for waiver. Something goes to the Secretary of State's office or the county clerk, who can then review it and act on that. Again, right now, this is a completely separate process where a letter has to be written and submitted and reviewed and put on a spreadsheet, and then a separate letter is mail merged out of a completely different program talking about the determination of what that waiver request was. So we definitely would like to see some streamlining through this process. Again, a few other things to think about. Are there better ways for the state to manage filings? Same thing for the counties. How can the system facilitate easier access, for counties and local candidates? And general questions, comments, thoughts, and ideas. That's what we want to hear from you. So with that, I think I'm going to take my seat. And we'll see if the panel has any thoughts at this point.
Actually, for the record, I'm Trevor Timmons. I'd like to ask a couple of questions. You mentioned that it's a manual review to ensure that occupation and employer are provided for contributions over $100. And is that it's a manual review for both manually and electronically submitted reports?
All manual reports, when they're data entered by the Secretary of State, now I can't speak for the counties, but I can speak to our processes, all paper-filed reports are reviewed as they're data entered. We find that we face challenges reviewing the electronic reports all the time because of the large amount of them and the man hours it simply takes to go through each individual entry. I only have three and a half staff members in our campaign finance team, and when we're doing bi-weekly filings right around an election and there are 700 committees filing every 2 weeks, it's particularly challenging. So there are those that slip through.
Sure. You mentioned that state filers are required under by rule to file electronically on October 1st, and I think that's all filers for whom the Secretary of State's office is the proper office for filing. So it's not just state-level offices, but it's state representatives. Anyone who reports to our office would then be included in that mandate.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Do you have an idea what percentage you're going through, the limit for contributions, if it's $20 or less or under $20, they can be non-itemized, right? Do you have any idea what percentage of contributions in terms of the total dollars flowing into campaign finance are not itemized?
I don't. Maybe somebody, from
pretty
the audience can respond. I think it's going to depend because our larger membership type committees, SEIU is, I think, one of our largest labor union committees. They take a small amount out of each member's paycheck every time. And they have a bunch of employees. So, I'm not sure, but that's something we could research prior to the next meeting.
No, I just wondered what percentage of, because we got three different categories into which information falls with contributions, non-itemized, then we've got a little more information, then we've got occupation employer required. I was just wondering if we had an idea what, the contributions, where they fall within those. And then last question for you before I ask Mr. Coolidge. Are documents around fine assessments, hearings, final determinations, are those available online? I saw some of the delinquency reporting from some of the other states, it's pretty rich. Do we provide in our office, the hearing determination letter or, what the final outcome was?
Actually, I think I'll speak to that, Trevor.
Okay.
any correspondence that's sent out from the Secretary of State's office is scanned through our document tracking system and is available through that elections manual search screen we looked at. Remember the slide with the box of all the things you can pick from? But I don't think it is either efficient or convenient for probably both for our staff and for any individual media public who would be looking for that information. Certainly not as convenient as these lovely little lists Rich was showing us.
Sure. And then Rich, great research on how some other states handle delinquency reporting and you know, list of committees that are got referred to the Attorney General for action and whatnot. Do you have any idea what the staffing levels are in some of these other state offices where they're it looks like they're doing some pretty some pretty rich work in terms of keeping track of who's late and posting all this stuff electronically. I mean, do you have a sense of how many of these states have made this kind of an automated thing, and how many are supplying this through labor?
It didn't sound like there were a lot of folks. I spoke to a gentleman in Virginia. Their directive, I guess, from the state legislature was the Secretary of State's office simply does the reporting. There is no enforcement. There is no audit. We'll leave that to the public to do. We'll just throw the information out there. The public will go through and they'll find the ones that are doing the infraction.
Sure.
Michigan, as we talked about last month, they have a software system that you download that all the committees must download, do their reports on, and then upload back into the system. That particular piece of software has what they call a validator. It kind of goes through automatically and makes sure occupation employer is included, addresses are complete, and it catches kind of the low-hanging fruit, if you will. And they'll do kind of more. They try and audit all the reports. They don't have the reporting periods that Colorado does, you know, the biweekly and during election years.
Right.
But they'll go through and they'll identify the big problems. They don't. If somebody forgot an address and the validator didn't pick it up and they found it, they're not going to send a letter out.
Right.
They're going to go after the big ones that say this contribution exceeded what they could give, and they find some more of the real big issues.
Sure. As the task force is moving forward and as we're pulling together information, we should seek to be automating as absolutely much as we possibly can. And so we do those things through automation instead of applying staff hours. And, it'd be interesting to find out how some other states maybe manage this, what degree of automation do they have, and then is it, at the, 5 days after reporting period, someone clicks a button and boom, the web page appears with all the fine letters and everything, and how much staff time is actually used up in kind of tracking those down and providing a real rich experience for someone who's trying to get information. And just kind of balancing labor hours versus automation. Thanks. Sure.
Can we ask you to come to the mic, though, so that you'll go through the broadcast?
George Walker. If I understood you right, you said that you collected the information and then you put it on the web or the internet. I think the word was throw it out there, and you would let the people or people reading it bring it to your attention if there is problems or if there is any rules or laws or statutes broken. But it seems to me that the Secretary of State's office is always the enforcement agent. The Secretary of State's office has to do more than simply collect information and, as you said, throw it out there. But it seems to me that the state agency always has to be in charge and has to be responsible and accountable for enforcement. In other words, at no point can the Secretary of State's office say, in effect, it's not our duty to be, in effect, the police officer, or however you want to phrase it, of first and last choice.
Sure, and I think actually the comment to which you're referring was from Rich reporting about Virginia, where they do not have campaign limits, but they require a frequent disclosure, and then citizens are kind of the enforcement agents. Is that's the impression I have?
But that's not true in Colorado.
I
Secretary of State is always an agent of enforcement.
I do, I think it's important to note two things. The Secretary of State reviews and performs audits, if you will, on reports to the best of our ability. Are those some that we simply can't get to? Definitely there are. It's also important to note that Colorado is unique in that our constitutional amendment that governs campaign finance allows the ability for a citizen to file a campaign finance complaint. So if there is some violation of law, not just in a report, but any sort of violation in law, the Constitution specifically sets out procedures for citizens to file complaints, and there's a whole process that that goes through. So in Colorado, I think it's a mixture of the two. The Secretary of State and also the county clerks, when appropriate, reviewing those reports for compliance, but also the citizens of the state have an opportunity to pursue enforcement, if you will, through a different course of action.
That's sort of like a citizen's arrest, I presume. But what I'm driving at is, in all cases, the Secretary of State's office is accountable if there's a violation.
That's a legal question. It's not something I can answer tonight.
The courts are always, you know, in any process, the courts are always, in effect, the final arbiter. But we have DORA in this state, the Department of Regulatory Agencies. And of course, we have the Secretary of State and many other agencies. But I'm saying part of the concept of the Secretary of State is that you are a regulatory agency. Is that correct?
We make rules. We enforce those things we can. We have staff that does their best to ensure compliance. More importantly than just enforcement, though, I think the goal and the vision of the Secretary of State, certainly in this administration, is to help people become compliant before we have to throw the book at them.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, kind of why we're here tonight is how can we help committees become compliant when they file reports, but for those that fail to do so, how do we ensure that compliance does get achieved, and then how is that information available to the public?
But education is always part of the regulatory agency, but enforcement is also a large part of what they're supposed to do, correct?
Yeah, I personally agree with your comments, yes.
Thank you.
The gentleman in the back, and I'm sorry, we'll have to ask you to come forward so that those attending remotely can hear you.
And there's a side benefit to actually walking to the microphone. You can go home and listen to this later and hear yourself. So,
well, that's okay. Vince Lemack with Committee for Diane Krishner. In regards to this gentleman's question, the county and the state offices do imply fines, but when the fines are not paid, then they turn it over. State attorneys to enact those fines further if needed. And as far as the automation, I think we really need to get that in place. I wasn't aware that that wasn't in place already. I came on to the committee late, so I didn't get all the information, including when to file. So I got hit up with a late fee, and they were really prompt. In Adams County, they were really prompt. Largest county here, they still, with all the committees that they have, they were still very prompt in getting the letter out, getting me notified, and making sure that I didn't have that problem again. So, let's get that automated so that they can have the help. I didn't know they were doing it manually.
Oh, thank you. That's great feedback.
Can I ask a question of Christy? I think, or maybe Trevor, you know, but did you say that with the electronic filing data, that's what's difficult to go through and determine where there's gaps, like if the employer and occupation data is missing for contribution? That's where the big, because the paper data is being validated by hand when we enter it.
Exactly. That's the challenge. It's not that the data is more complex or difficult mm-hmm. than an electronic filing. It's that we have a set of eyes looking at every paper report that comes in because data entry is required. It has to be done. Then when that is done, if we have remaining time before the next filing date, we can focus our attention to looking at electronically filed reports. Tend to get pushed towards the back.
Currently, there's not a set of reporting or a set of queries that are set up to kind of look through the electronically filed data to look for those kinds of gaps.
No, and I think we, this office and the counties, desperately need that.
My name is Chris Camel. I'm with the Credit Union Legislative Action Committee, and I'm in favor for the automation check. The FEC also has a free software that you can download. And it's coming from a membership association committee where we have hundreds of people who contribute to our committee, not only on our side, but I would think it'd be advantageous labor hours when you're talking about checking over the frivolous stuff. Is all that stuff there? Because just on the last FEC report that I ran for the federal one, it runs a quick validation and it tells you right where the errors are. And versus spending hours scoping over a report trying to find did you work for this company or this, that, or the other, it tells you right where it's at. You can go make the change. And I would imagine on your side, that's something you don't have to look for if the software is picking it up automatically.
Good evening. My name is Christine Reynolds, and I work in the Campaign Finance Unit for the Secretary of State's office. And I've provided the panel with some suggested improvements. But I just want to hit a couple of highlights because it's a couple of pages long. What I think everyone else has been talking about is the audit features. And I know that several of the committees that I've dealt with and or county clerks, when I've dealt with them, would really like the ability for the system to do an automated check prior to the committee filing the report. So it can give them a heads up if they are missing occupation, an employer, or any other type of deficiency. And still give them the option if they're not willing to make a change or they don't have the information, say, okay, you can go ahead and file this, but you've been warned, so to speak, that there is a deficiency. And then along with that is a notice to the county clerk or the Secretary of State staff saying, hey, this committee's made a filing, but it's deficient. That would be a big benefit. One of the other options, or one of the other things, would be to allow the counties the ability to add their own reports. Currently, the system, we set it up for the counties that they have so many reports in a year and that they let us know those dates and we set them up. However, if they have a recall election or a special district election or some other type of election that is not common, they have to send that information to the Secretary of State's office and we have to set it up for them. It'd be very beneficial for the counties to be able to set that up for themselves and not wait for us to have to take care of it. Talking about automated features would be an email notification at several stages when a committee would be filing. So maybe an email notice would go out to the committee from the system at the end of a reporting period going, your next report is due on this date. Currently that's done at the Secretary of State's office, but it's a manual process of gathering that email addresses and then submitting an email out. The system doesn't do that. It automated. Also is maybe when the committee is late in filing their report, the day after you didn't file the report, the committee gets an email that says you forgot to file your report. There is a penalty accruing for this. And then once they do file the report, another automated notice goes out and says, great, thank you for filing. However, you are now being penalized, whatever the amount would be. I think somebody else had talked about the bulk filing data and that's available currently for regular reports. However, we don't have that feature for amended reports. That would be a great feature if we could do that. The bulk filing, what we have currently is a XML or a tab delimited where you don't have to use the online data entry system, where some people have rightfully complain that you have to data enter it into our system and if you're keeping it separately. So we have an XML or a tab delimited format. That is only available for the regular scheduled report filings. So if somebody has to file an adjustment or make an amendment to maybe an entry or something, they're not able to just upload it. They have to go into the data entry system, put in the new entry, or make the adjustment. It'd be nice if they could just upload that.
Yeah, and further, we refer to it as bulk data transmittal through XML or tab delimited. What it means is the agent for the committee has in their own little spreadsheet all the contributions and expenditure, and it sends a file. You know, you extract a file and just drop it off at the website. That's what we're talking about when we say tab delimited or XML, rather than somebody logging onto the Secretary of State's website and then re-entering each contribution and each expenditure. So the problem we face, or the committees face really, is that if you're a large committee, you can do bulk filing of your standard reports. But if you have to make mass correction for some reason, you can't do the bulk filing. XML and tab delimited is not supported currently if you have to adjust or amend a report that's already been filed. And it's problematic for really large committees. I'm sorry. We need to have some audience mics next time.
That would bring in the better perspective of having downloadable software. That way, it would automatically do a lot of those things. You know, H&R Block uses it for an example. Back stuff, you go into H&R Block, everything's automatically verified right there at the office before they even file. Well, if we do the same thing here, then we're going to get away from those problems. And to comment on something she talked about earlier, her first issue was having to file a report even if you don't have all the information. Well, it's already in the laws that you're not supposed to file that contribution. Anything larger than $100 has to have the lawyer and the occupation. Well, if you don't have that, it's already in the laws that you don't file that until you have it or you return the check.
No, that's not entirely true.
Well, that's what you explained to me.
There are some things that can be deficient in a report, and the Secretary of State has promulgated rules in several instances, occupation and employer being one of those, that if you don't have that and it's required upon receiving the contribution, you have up to 30 days to acquire that information and update your report and still be in compliance with the law. So there are a few exceptions to that where somebody might want to send their report with the information they have, knowing that they'll have to amend it later.
But there again, there lies the problem. If you cannot get the information, say it was somebody you don't know how to get in touch with, you're going to have to, you know, either just tear up the check or send it back somehow. But if you don't even have an address to send it back to, I did run into this. There's nothing you can do. So it was already filed. Didn't have the employer information, didn't have their address information. We filed it anyway. We ended up tearing up the check because we couldn't deposit it because we didn't have the information. So if we get away from go ahead and filing it anyway, following the proper procedures.
All right. I just have a couple of more comments. One of our limitations in the system does not allow a committee to have more than one email address on file with us. So in the case where an agent or a candidate might be out of town or some reason called away and they're not able to file the report, some of these notifications that I'm suggesting, there's multiple email addresses, that gives them one more chance to make sure their report's filed timely. The great research Rich did was showing us all the delinquent processes or displays from the other websites from the various states would be a way to track the delinquencies or the imposed penalties once they've been imposed. The system currently doesn't have an electronic means. I mean, we certainly send the letters, scan them, make them available on the website, but I know when we've gotten open records requests, either from the media or just the general public wanting to know, I know this committee filed late, have they paid their penalty? It's a manual search. So if there was a way to automate it or make it electronically known on the website, that would definitely help the general public as well as us trying to answer questions. So those are just a few of the comments I have, and I want to thank you for allowing me to come up.
Thank you very much.
Wes Long, treasurer of the Libertarian Party of Colorado. The one thing that we've found, at least I personally have found, is it's a little difficult with the current system, is during the off-election years, we have 3 months between reporting periods, and you have to total the contributions of each person over the 3 months to give you the reporting period total manually. That prevents us from building the reports as we go, rather than just, you know, at the end of the reporting period, we have to cram everything in. If the system could total the contributions for each contributor itself, it would allow us to every week update our in-progress report and make it a lot easier to get it done when it's due.
And so, Wes, just let me make sure I understand. So you may get multiple contributions from a single individual. You have to report the date of each of the individual contributions. Mm-hmm. But if you could do that, and then it kind of all sums up when you're actually... when you actually need to submit the report, then that would be useful.
Yeah, and like every Wednesday night, I could just catch up our in-progress report.
Sure, absolutely.
But it really transcends that three-month period. It's for that whole cycle, because you need to be sensitive to the aggregate amount for the cycle.
Mm-hmm. But the report asks for the total for the reporting period.
I thought it was a cycle long.
It's per individual contribution and aggregate per the election cycle. But in any event, I could certainly see where that's difficult, because although the current system allows you to do some early work and pin the file, if you will, if you're getting contributions every week, you're absolutely right. You'd have to go back and change that aggregate amount every time you get a new one. That's a great idea. Thank you. Scott, are you ready?
My name is Scott Shires, and I head up a company called Campaign Compliance Center. And as most of the Secretary of State staff is aware, during the 06 election cycle, we had over 100 clients. And I believe we filed close to over 1,200 reports during that time frame. And for most of that period, we filed paper reports until, through the efforts of Robert Mazurek and election staff and the IT department at the Secretary of State's office, we started appending or bulk filing reports, whatever terminology you guys are using internally. But we started appending our reports directly to the Secretary of State database, and we were paperless from September 15th, 06, and still today remain paperless filers to the Secretary of State's office. We have finally mastered how to do a terminal report paperless. Teaching ourselves in the Secretary of State's office how to accept a terminal report electronically was a waiver and fine odyssey through several months, but we finally have gotten through that. We also are anxious to have the ability to file amended reports as well electronically. Now, I want to just follow up again on some of the comments that Mr. Robert Mazurek made at the last meeting on July 12th, which I could not attend. And some of this may be exactly same things he said. I don't know, because I've not listened to the transcript of that report. so if I repeat exactly some of the stuff that he said, I apologize. Again, I want to thank the Secretary of State staff for all the close work we've done to develop the system. We are fully automated. We can do, internal to our software, most of the features that have been part of the public comment today. We review for those that excess contributions. We have an automatic excess contribution review that gives us a report of which contributors we need to take a second look at. We have a null void field. So if we have information that's missing, we can pull that out. We have an over $100 contributor report that shows all of the occupation and employer information for that committee, for that reporting period, across all of our clients, whatever we choose to search on. And we can go back and then contact or try and chase down those people we don't have the information and we utilize the 30-day period as much as possible. And we, too, have had to tear up checks or return money. This part of the game, you're never going to get it all. Our system, as we've developed it, we can also import an Excel spreadsheet. Our hardest function is not preparing the reports. Preparing reports is exceptionally easy. Gathering the data to put into the reports is the workload. Getting candidates, candidate treasurers that are, we are working with to give us the information, to provide us copies of the checks, to provide us copies of their expenditures, that's our hard part. For some of our clients who are already maintaining their own data in an Excel spreadsheet access that they've designed themselves, we've developed the ability to take a Excel spreadsheet, CSV, and import it into our system. It automatically becomes part of the data of our system. And then at the press of several buttons, setting the dates for the report period, a review process, we can append directly into the Secretary of State's system. So it solved the problems for people not having to double input. Our software completes that problem. We have, since the last report, committee hearing, we have developed a self-executable version of our software. You do not need Microsoft Office. You do not need access on your computer. This is a self-executing CD. It moves our software onto any computer that you wish to have it moved onto, which would give everybody the ability to import their historical records as well as their current existing records. It would give county clerk and recorders the ability to accept spreadsheets, process it through so that they would not have to re-enter and then submit to the Secretary of State's office on a direct link to the database. Our software also stores all the reports and all the data that's ever been entered, so I can search through all the reports for all of my committees. On individual contributors, I can search through them, and by clicking a historical button, I can see all the committees that they've given, all the dates they've given, all the dollar amounts they've given, which committees they've given to. So I have the historical search capability as well. That's why I can handle 100 clients, like on a biweekly. My efforts, typing in is not a problem, but I only like to type once. I refuse to type twice. The problem is getting the data. I would love, and our process is that we're going to make this available to our clients during the next cycle so that I'm out of the data collection process with raw checks and copies thereof, raw vouchers and invoices that they've paid, and let them do the typing and let me do the submission after I do my own review. But I still eyeball review just about every single report before I allow it to be uploaded to the Secretary of State's website. And as far as a small technical change that I would like to see immediately, you currently give email notification of a report being filed at the Secretary of State's office. That report does not include the committee name. It simply includes the committee ID number. With 100 committees, that means I have to eyeball search the ID number with the list of all my clients' ID numbers, figure out which committee I just successfully filed so that I can keep record of it. So if you could please, please put a committee name on any and all electronic email reports that you guys generate in the future, I would greatly appreciate it.
I think that's something, Scott, we might be able to do. Sorry about the problem is we don't see the emails. So when they're originally created by our wonderful guys upstairs, they go out to committees, and our staff never sees them. So until you tell us this, we don't know what needs fixed. But at least that piece, I bet we can fix.
Please fix that.
And
before the next reporting session.
Sure. And actually, I've got a question. We heard at the last public meeting, you know, there are various ways of actually allowing people to file information. You know, direct access, you know, using a web page. So you go to a web page and you type in information. You saw some of those screens that people use to do that. Accepting filings through some bulk, you know, transmission method, whether it's XML-based, tabbed limited files that your software generates, and then downloadable software or software that's sitting on your desktop. And I've got a question. I've never run for office. I've never served as a treasurer for anyone running for office. Do people that run campaigns, do they already have software that does campaign-related things? I mean, if we were to, as part of this effort, provide some downloadable software, is it supplanting something that campaigns and candidates already have, and it's going to knock someone else out of a market? Or is it something that, you know, if we provide some downloadable software that did audit checks and these sort of things before the point of filing, it's going to meet a need that exists and there's really no one there? And maybe, Scott, maybe you can address it.
Address that from personal experience as well as this web searches that I've done. Aristotle is probably one of the biggest software providers in the nation in regard to FEC. As a portion of your purchase price of their software, which I've heard is $10,000, but I've never wanted to purchase it, so I've never priced it for myself. You can also get a state reporting adjunct system so that the software that you've entered into a federal election that also has to be reported at a Secretary of State's office can also submit that reporting. For a long time, the Secretary of State's office did accept Aristotle filings. My understanding is that there were difficulties with it. I don't know whether those problems got resolved or solved. I really don't know the technical issue about whether Aristotle is still a bulk filer through an XML format to the Secretary of State's office of Colorado. But I do know that they have that market pretty well sewed up, FEC. Colin Campbell, member of your own commission, has campaign management software that certainly handles a lot of the issues and things that a campaign needs to manage itself, including a master database accessible by web, et cetera, so forth and so on. There are companies throughout the nation that if you type in the right words on Google, you'll always get more hits than you can handle in a given lifetime. There are a lot of software companies out there that provide some functionality to campaign management. There are some that provide reporting software to others. We heard about Michigan, downloadable software. You know, as an entrepreneur, private citizen, I would love to have the opportunity to license my software to the Colorado Secretary of State's office and let it become the downloadable software off site to every campaign committee in the state. It would make everybody's life easier. I would spend that money wisely and would pay my proper portion of taxes back to the state of Colorado. So, yes, there are available commercial platforms.
Right.
Anytime government provides any service that is otherwise being provided by a private citizen, government receives less tax revenue from the private sector.
Wes, did you have something to add?
I'd just say that many of our campaigns at county level and below are pretty small, and you know, there are five or six people that are actually doing everything. The most common thing for them to do is to find somebody who's a bookkeeper or an accountant, and they generally just use whatever software they already have. QuickBooks is the most popular one we've seen. So. No, it does not, but that's how they do their books. And it's possible to pull data out of QuickBooks and prepare these XML bulk filings.
Sure.
One thing I'm working on personally right now.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, I guess I would just make a couple of quick additions to that. And it seems like there's different levels of campaigns typically based on size, and most larger campaigns kind of have more need for political components of a system like that, you know, to be able to communicate to volunteers and their own donors and contributors and things like that. And a lot of the smaller campaigns, that's been my experience anyway, seem to think of software more as being an accounting sort of package like QuickBooks or something like that, or just Excel to keep track of those sorts of lists. So I think fundamentally, you know, if there's going to be this requirement for electronic filing across the board, what we've seen nationally is that whenever there is a requirement for that, then suddenly there's this increased demand for software to help support it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
So I think that for Scott's efforts or for other developers' efforts, I think that probably there's just going to be this increased demand for it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the FEC's decision to provide free software that can support that was probably a reasonable decision as well, because you know we shouldn't be in a position, I think, as a state of making it harder to run for office for anybody. I mean, it's already hard enough to run for office, and so I don't think that it's inherently against the capitalist model to allow some free download, even if it does compete against, you know, my product or somebody else's product.
Sure, sure. I appreciate that. Any other comments to that question? Please.
Yeah, I just want to add on to both what both last two comments. The FEC allows you to download that free software, and it validates it prior to you filing it, so it gives you the opportunity to correct it. They are also the competing Aristotle, Vocus. You have Capital Advantage that has a knowledge component that also does a pack build. It's called a pack builder. So, and they deal with, I think, 30 states on state compliance, where they monitor the state laws and they help you file it. What they do is they give you a paper report, and then you just file the paper report. And I think they're looking at ways also to do the electronic filing component. But for us, we have a lot of contributors, but we can't afford the big software, Aristotle. We can't afford the big one. So we look, I mean, I use the FEC filer. I download that, and I use it all the time. So if the state could also offer the same services, I agree with our taxes. I'd be happy to pay that tax bill in exchange for something that makes all of our lives easier.
So. Sure. Thank you.
So in order to keep the private software engineers busy, I think the state ought to just make theirs single committee, simple processing software. Let the software companies come up with the more complicated software that's needed for multiple committee companies and other people who have large number of contributors. Let them buy or even search for the larger software packages that can deal with it a lot easier. The smaller campaigns, that's a lot of money. Well, they're trying to do things cheaply. So
yeah.
If you can keep the downloadable software that you have just simple as single committee and simple packages, then I think that would still meet with everybody's needs.
The question, though, if you go down this path, is like, where do you draw the line of complexity? Because the part that I think we all agree is valuable in this kind of software, if we were going to distribute this out to committees, is the kind of accounting components of it, so that the committees could keep track of their own list themselves and still send the data up in bulk to the Secretary of State, right?
Exactly.
We all agree that that's kind of the important part.
Exactly. If it's a single committee software that we're downloading from you, you know, we're only a single committee, a small campaign, then that's on our computer. We're able to research whatever we need to research.
Right, but what I'm saying is, where do you draw the line of complexity for how much extra functionality that software should have? Like, what sort of additional search capability should it have? What sort of additional, you know what I'm saying? And that's really kind of a tough standard to come up with, because obviously the more complex you make it, the...
Well, I think that's fairly simple, actually.
Mm.
Anybody who's actually done any, you know, access design can actually give you good answers on that. The functionality is single campaign versus multiple campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Scott here is doing multiple campaigns with multiple contributors. He needs all the functionality he can get out of it and all the automation he can get out of it. For a single person campaign, really, with it being such a small campaign versus what he does, or even on the state level, you know, I work with the county level. Small campaign, really, they can do things visually pretty easily. So we really, even though we want the automation, that'd be great. I'd love to see that, because it'll help, especially with new campaign treasurers coming on board for different campaigns and stuff like that. Help them so that they don't make mistakes and have to get letters and fines.
Yeah.
You know, just because they are trying hard, it's not a matter of that. Trying to help them along a little bit.
So are you basically kind of advocating for a very kind of simple client-side package that basically just allows you to keep track of the donors and the contribution expenditure data?
And everything that's needed on the state form when you go online and file it, because that's how I did it.
But then it wouldn't have any supplemental functionality. Like you couldn't look up a list of donors in a certain range to send out Christmas cards.
If you wanted it on your laptop, it would actually definitely give you some. Where I had to do everything on site, gather it all up as much as I could, take it home, and then do it there. If I had it to where I could download it to a laptop and then take it with me, it would be a great help.
Mm-hmm. We've already done that. Not only with a single committee, because we're not going to export or sell to one committee my full software. I'm not going to do that, because my software can also transfer between a membership committee to small donor committees and can track the transfers and post to all the different reports automatically so that you don't have to regenerate a report a second time because you've just transferred. That functionality wouldn't come with what I would want to provide to an individual committee. But not only would it provide the ability to do the Secretary of State reports and then uplink, but for any range date that you want to select, it would give you an Excel spreadsheet. So if your committee's been in existence for 3 years, you could get all your donors over 3 years. And then once it was on Excel, you go ahead and sort it, dice it any darn way you want. And so that we had already taken that into consideration, because a committee needs to not retype its data.
Sure.
That's the whole issue. So if it types it in once, then it can submit to the Secretary of State, and then it can do whatever it wants
with
all of that data in an Excel output through the software that I already have on that CD. That's what we've already designed.
Right, but for a state-provided, filer assistance component, I mean, should it be, so feature-rich that it is the preferred and really be the only way that a filer that isn't going to come to a web page and type it in, or had some other software that could meet the XML or a tab delimited format. I mean, I guess that's really my question. If the Secretary of State provides some downloadable software, then is there a market for that today? I'm hearing yes. And if we did provide that, then should we provide something extremely simple that doesn't have this kind of functionality, or something that has all the functionality because we can, even though it may displace some entrepreneurs that are currently working in the area?
And the kind of supplemental question that I'm really trying to ask about this is that whenever you add additional functionality to a piece of software, there's additional complexity to it, and there's maintenance issues, and there's support issues, and there's training issues, and there's all that kind of other stuff. And so the question that I'm kind of not really clear about is, where do we draw the line, and how featureful or how simple this package might be?
I think the capitalistic market gives you the perfect answer to that: price. Certainly, if the state is requiring an electronic filing ability, then provide a software that makes that simple for a single committee. If that's a license operation, if someone else takes and develops based on what I've already said is available, I mean, there are a lot of developers in the country that can do what we've done. We just already have it. You want more functionality? Call me. I'll sell it to you. I mean, it's just going to be that simple. I think if the state provided a downloadable software that only allowed the committee to file a report with the Secretary of State and did not allow the committee to get its own data out in a reusable format, Excel, that would be too simple. Now, for instance, one of my reports is contributions by month. Across all donors and all committees, I can track how much money is given in a given month. What are the months people tend to give? I just thought it'd be an interesting report, so we designed it in. And it is interesting. I mean, you can really watch the cycle of giving in an election cycle. But anyway.
And I do think, Scott, your point is very well made for those committees who do need the Cadillac version of the software really to function well. But I think, was it Vince? I think his was well made that, in a smaller campaign, if you do have a turnover in your treasurer or agent, it's very difficult, especially if the software adds another layer of complexity when you're already thrown in to this, constitutional amendment that's thrown on your desk with a stack of bills this high. And then if the system is difficult, that's problematic too. So I think we need to strike a balance as we move forward, however that is, if it's a downloadable version, whatever direction, you know, the Secretary of State himself chooses to go, I think it's important that we strike a balance between the needs of large committees and the needs of these small, not only the needs, but training challenges and complexity issues that small committees could face. So it's going to be tough, you know, for us to draw, where do you draw that line in the sand? And I don't know. So maybe we make certain functions, maybe we make the bells and whistles, you know, separate, where you don't have to use these if you really don't want to, and just use those if necessary.
You know, if the state decides that they're not going to provide the software in a downloadable format because they can't answer all those questions, or simply the money's not available to make it available, you know, make that available across the board, you can and have, and there is available, the list of all the committees in the state, and I have no problems mailing to them and offering them to sell, offering to sell the software to them, and I'll train them.
Thanks, Scott.
Please.
My name is Elaine Brawford, and I have just a couple of comments. One, I'm not a programmer. I don't know anything about it. I'm not a campaign worker. I don't know that much about that. But I do know there's also open source software out there. What it consists of, I really don't know, but I do know people who are using it and customizing it to their needs and would be very unhappy if they couldn't use it for their complete campaign. To a couple of points that a few of you just made about new people and training challenges and so forth, just one thing I would like to caution, and I saw this with some of the other states as well, this stuff is so full of jargon and CRS, da-yada-da-da-da-da-da-da. We need to be very careful as we write the interfaces, as we write the training, any help files, what have you, that what is being said is very explicit, does not require a lot of extra training, and it does not require people to go out of their minds when they're new and decide to just not participate at all.
And do you mind if I ask a question? Jargon,
uh-huh.
And in this context, is it technical jargon or is it campaign jargon?
What
or
I
both?
Saw in five, you know, in the few minutes up there was
right.
campaign jargon and
right.
legal jargon.
Sure.
I frequently see technical jargon as well, but I didn't see it in the examples.
Sure, sure. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll plead guilty to being a novice in some of this area as well. So I.
George Walker again. One of the panelists mentioned the point of this process to get more people involved in the election process. And this gentleman here mentioned the complexity. But one of the things I'm struck by, there are many people, including myself, that think elections are simply too expensive, that money has too much power. McCain, Feingold addressed this issue, as have other people. But what I'm hearing here is absolutely with these systems, you can put in unlimited money. When you talk about complexity, very often what you're talking about is how much does it cost? And it seems that maybe I shouldn't say this, but this commission has taken a position that accountability is what we're after. In other words, how much money you spend or how complex it is. Complex it is, and that goes along with how much money you spend, is not what we're interested in. In other words, spend as much as you want on the campaigns or spend as much as you have, but be accountable. Is that what I'm hearing? Am I hearing it correctly? That we're not concerned about how much you spend as long as you're accountable.
Yeah, and you know, I think that this commission is doesn't have that burden to decide what is appropriate to spend and not. Contribution mm-hmm. limits, what's prohibited, what's permissive, those things are all laid out in the Colorado
mm-hmm.
Constitution
mm-hmm.
and further in our state laws and the statutes.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's probably beyond our scope, but certainly as a Secretary of State's office, and I believe I speak for this commission as well, we do obviously support disclosure and transparency in the campaign funding process, but I think it's beyond our abilities to
okay.
even consider limiting funds. It's simply out of our jurisdiction, if you will.
But what I'm suggesting is complexity and the amount it costs go together. I'm not sure there's a perfect correlation, but I think there's a strong correlation.
Okay.
It would be nice to keep it simple, but one of the ways to keep it simple is to make it not so expensive.
Thank you. And, sir, I think you've been waiting a bit.
You're not going to have to remember this, but my name is Parwez Yahya, and I work for Tyler Technologies, and we have just finished actually the process of moving the city of Philadelphia from paper to electronic filing for the campaign ethics board. And one thing you are going to want to keep in mind is that you, if you are forcing people to move to electronic filing, you are going to absolutely need to provide an option for and on their system, filing system. And your question before, the complexity of that system, 95% of the committees that actually file don't care about any sort of reporting. You're going to have maybe like the higher echelon, the top ones, are going to care about any sort of reporting. The only thing they're going to use that software for is to complete their necessary obligations to file, and that's the only thing they're going to care about. And the ones that are going to care about the reporting can buy the extra software to do that information, to report and sort their information by.
Tell me, where do you get that? I mean, that's really useful information to hear, but I'm curious, like, how did you come about that?
Well, I mean, we went through the process of doing this from pure paper. The ethics committee needed to move it to electronic, and we've had to, for every committee that's come in, mm-hmm. we've had to personally train them, talk to them, sit there and speak with them, teach them how to use a system, and do that through, I've been on through this for 4 cycles now, going through this process, and before the last 2 cycles, we didn't have that option of the downloadable application, mm-hmm. and I don't know what kind of database backing you have for this or what kind of the data is being put into. I know for a fact that people do not like to sit there typing into the internet, especially given the circumstances. When you get the large data files, that those are not compatible directly. It takes a lot of work on the process of getting them from the data file to being put in. There's a lot of process in that. The actual simple application that goes onto the computer that verifies the data that needs to be put in is both great for the people that are filing and for you guys when you're actually dealing with the system.
But what I'm trying to ask you is the 95% of committees that
we've been asked for reporting.
Uh huh.
And the people that I care about reporting are reporters,
mm-hmm.
are ethics committee members,
mm-hmm.
are recorders' offices
mm-hmm.
for statistical information. I mean, I say 95% because I'm assuming that some larger committees would
internally
want to know that information, but I've never been asked for it.
Mm-hmm.
They have their committees, they know what's filing, but really they don't care about their information.
Well, that's kind of like the model that the FEC follows. The software that they provide is really great at doing that, but it's not really rich for political purposes or other features.
Right. Mm-hmm. But the actual process of getting people switched over, it's something that needs to be out there, or it's going to cause a lot of problems for both you and them.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You know, Cindy, if before we wrap up the meeting, and there may be more comments from the audience, my intention is certainly not to end that, but I wondered if Cindy, who is our representative from the county clerks, might have some thoughts, comments, or summaries of the items that you have received in the form of written comments from the counties.
I do. At the county level, we do on a very short time frame before the election, and I'm sure that Christy can verify this too, that we do input the information into the computer system by hand, and it is cumbersome at a manual level, but you know, we get it done on time, but it's cumbersome. We would like to see the computer system upgraded, a lot more of the automated stuff to be, you know, for the computer system, a lot more automation. Christine brought some good points to this too. So we do have some comments. Should I read most of them from the counties?
You know, whatever you'd like, if you'd like to summarize. I have a question too. Would it be fair to say that you think a lot of the clerks or the comments that you did mm-hmm. receive, the comments indicated that the county users do need added functionality in order to make the process more efficient?
Oh, definitely.
And if you'd like to maybe just go through some of the highlights of what you heard the most, I think that might be useful for the whole group.
We have some of the screens don't work accurately. We have like one of the screens, it times out. I think we even mentioned that at the previous meeting, that when you go to hit the back button, it times out. That's one of our main things, especially when you're underneath a time crunch and stuff. That does happen. Entering the dates into the computer, we have to enter dates into the computer to set this up, and sometimes that's hard too, or even to delete a date, that's hard too. Some of the screens for like the admin functions probably could be consolidated. We have what's called green screens and gold screens. We probably could have those combined into one system. The overall functionality probably could be simpler for the counties, because what we're looking for basically is to something really very very easy to use to get the information in easier, accurately, and to have that out as quickly as possible so the public can see this. So that's more of what I'm hearing from the counties. They do have some other concerns. Some of the entries, if they're common, like a city name, or if it says retired on there, they have drop-down screens, so they don't have to sit there and type it all the time. Zip code, yeah, thank you. Yeah, that would be too. Yeah, one of the things too we did hear from a couple of the counties is that when we enter in a candidate, we have to attach that continually to the filing date. And if we could just enter in the filing date once for that particular candidate or committee, and then if we have other candidates and committees for that, it would just automatically enter it in instead of having to attach it each and every time a candidate would file with us. That would just save us some time. So those are some of the basic highlights in that. But like I said, anything that would make it easier for the counties and quicker for the counties, so we can get this on, because like I said, we're underneath time constraints too, and with a small staff. And we want to make sure that we have it out there for the public to see, too.
I think it's fair to say that your busiest campaign finance time, where you do have staff dedicated mm-hmm. to working on these functions, doing the data entry, watching for delinquencies, is also right before the election. So it's inefficiencies can make a particularly difficult strain on the counties, because you don't generally, mm-hmm. most counties don't have dedicated staff for campaign finances. Would that be accurate?
That's very accurate, because we have 21 days before the election, the Friday right before the election, and then we have the 30 days after. But even 30 days after, we're still into the election process still. So, you know, and we take, and I know Jefferson County as well as all the counties, when we enter the filings, we look at them, and if there's something wrong, you know, we send out what we call trouble letters, and we let the campaigns know that there's a problem with their filings, and that's in law. It says that you have to. And you know, it's one of those things where we keep track of it, but like Christy was saying, if we're underneath a time constraint, something can slip through, and we don't want that to happen. We want to be accurate. We want to make sure everything's done correctly and everything to show, because that's what we're here for.
Thank you, Cindy. And I think for the record, in the notice of meeting, I know that our folks indicated that we would receive comments submitted in writing by fax or email. I know some of those have been provided so as to not require the people come to our meeting to actually provide some input to the task force. And I believe all these comments that have been made by some filers, by some county administrators that actually manage this process, they'll be made available to the committee, and I believe provided on the website, so people can see the sort of comments that have come in and actually take advantage of that.
Are there any other comments then from the audience or panel? Rory?
Yeah, I had a couple of questions as we're looking through this, and pardon my ignorance on the whole systems and all that kind of thing, but as we're talking about whether it's downloadable or whether it's a something that's purchased or whatever, are there any, how does it work if somebody, say, has an Apple, a Macintosh computer rather than Windows? Are there compatibility issues, or is something able to be designed so both systems will be able to do what we're talking about?
Yeah, it's definitely possible to build applications that are cross-platform. That kind of gets back to my earlier point, and that is that sometimes the more stuff you add, the more complex the thing is, and you know that's an issue, right? And so the more platforms you're going to support, that potentially adds more complexity to it. And I mean, I think one of the reasons why it might be one of those decisions that collectively we make to just support, you know, Windows or just support one OS because of the kind of dominant nature of it. But it's certainly possible to do, so that's cross-platform.
And then the other thing that I wanted to briefly speak on, one of the gentlemen a minute ago said that the 95%, the people who will want it are reporters as far as the information. And he's probably right. Reporters are going to be the ones asking for it, or assignment editors or whatever. But the comment that they can afford to buy it, I think, is a little bit of a misnomer. You know, the big ABC or NBC or somebody like that comes in, if they're looking for reports, and maybe I'm getting things confused, but, you know, a small paper like Brush, Colorado, is not going to be able to buy something with the bells and whistles, but they may want to do the same research.
Maybe I can help clarify that a little bit. Probably all of those sorts of reporting components you would do through the Secretary of State's website after that data has been appended from the filer. The filer data is just like an individual committee would have, so there wouldn't really be any reporting that would be useful to you at that granular level. Probably you'd want to go to the Secretary of State's site to get all that and aggregate it across multiple campaigns or things.
Okay. Thanks. Any additional comments to be offered by the audience or by the panel?
Next meeting is Thursday, September 13th at 5 o'clock. This is going to be Rory's special meeting, how you access campaign finance data. This will be a fun one. We're going to look at a lot of different states and how they're doing it, and different reports they run, and this is going to be a fun one. So, see you then. Thanks for coming.
Yes, thank you all.